I think if they wanted to, they might be able to. If you were subpoenaing them to come in and talk about the county records, how are these things recorded? How do you guys keep these records? And what do people know about? You could subpoena them to come in and do that, and you probably just like with the police officer, you probably could get into, well, in your expert opinion, was this done in conformance with the standards that are used in your office? They probably would go ahead and answer those questions. But people do. I mean, in medical malpractice cases, you often get into people the defendant doctor doesn't have to be an expert against himself, and will stop and not give an expert testimony when asked on occasion.
Thank you, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Snyder.
With respect to Representative Clark's question, I think a distinction should be made between, in the case of a surveyor, whether you're asking him to come to testify as to something that he's already witnessed or done. If you're asking him to go out and resurvey a parcel of land and then come in and testify as to the results of the resurvey, I suspect that he'd want a witness fee to do that, especially if it's beyond the scope of his employment as a surveyor.
Yeah, and the scenario I'm trying to draw is where it's sort of outside of his normal duties, just for comparison purposes.
Mr. Chair, we would agree if a person is being subpoenaed or is coming to court solely to act as an expert, they should be paid and the bill should be passed as to that. But if they're coming as to both and it's the expert testimony is simply incidental, or a portion of their overall testimony, I don't see why they should be different.
Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your coming. Further witnesses on House Bill 2828. It's the intent of the chair to wait and see what is going to happen and hold this for a work session at a later time. But it seems that with the restrictions in the bill as expert witnesses been as they are defined, that would allow most of the testimony that the officers presently testified to in most civil actions to come in, as long as you stay this side of using them as an expert to reconstruct the accident, which means to me that have very limited application. And if Representative Minnis, who wants to bring it back and try to expand it further, then we have an entirely different proposition. So we're going ahead and close the public hearing and open a public hearing on House Bill 3349. Mr. Bronner and Company. Chairman, Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. With me is Ken Sherman, Jr., General Counsel of the Oregon Bankers Association, Dave Ellis, Vice President, Associate Counsel for First Interstate Bank of Oregon. In 1980, Congress passed the Federal Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, commonly called the Superfund Law. Now, this important piece of legislation has held companies accountable for damages they have caused to the environment by requiring the owners and operators of these properties to pay to clean them up. In the original law, there was a specific exemption from liability for lenders who hold as collateral property that is contaminated by environmental waste that they did not cause. However, court decisions interpreting this exemption have so narrowed it as to virtually eliminate any protection for these lenders. Another unanticipated result of the Superfund law has been to put at great risk financial institutions and others who act as trustees or otherwise in a fiduciary capacity to hold property which may prove to have been contaminated. In a pending case, as an example, filed by the Environmental Protection Agency against an Oregon bank, the EPA is seeking a court order to compel the bank to clean up PCBs at a manufacturing site which is one of the assets of a trust for which the bank is a trustee. This and similar actions expose banks and other fiduciaries and other lenders to open-ended liability for cleaning up contamination which they did not cause. The impact of CERCLA and corresponding state laws on the lending community is having a very significant adverse consequence for the American business community from coast to coast with respect to the availability of credit. And that's the primary purpose of this act, is to speak to credit and fiduciary availability. We discuss a host of lenders in this bill, and it's not just a banking bill. It is, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a very, very important bill. The Congress of the United States is currently addressing the issue, and you'll hear that Congressman LaFalce of New York, with close to 200 sponsors at the present time, including our own Congressman Smith and Congressman Kopetsky, and a commitment from Congressman Aucoin and Congressman DeFazio that they will join, has introduced similar legislation to the bill before you. H.R. 1450 will have a hearing next week in the Congress. On the Senate side, Senator Garn of Utah, Republican of Utah, has a similar bill, and Senator Packwood and Hatfield have committed to join there. In 1989, the Oregon Bankers Association worked with DEQ in Oregon to pass legislation that would tie in with the Small Business Administration and would work to allow us to lend to a party where contamination had occurred for purposes of cleanup. Now, I'd venture to say that since that time, because of the court decisions, been very little, perhaps none, no lending in this area because of the dangers involved. We'd like to be a positive part of the process. You'll also hear that we can take a walk today and do. If we're foreclosing on a piece of property and there is contamination, it's going to wind up with the county or the public cleaning up the site. Now, there are those that say, why not let the lenders with the, quote, deep pockets, end of quote, clean it up, keep them on the hook so that they'll be responsible for the cleanup that we did not cause. Well, number one, we need to remember whose money we're investing. It's our depositors. Number two, there are those that charge us with increased fees and charges in the modern banking society, and guess why those fees and charges are as high as they are because of the cost of doing business. And I guess, finally, the curtailment of credit. At the very time that a company needs a financial partner from the traditional source, we're having to abandon some industries because we just can't take the risk. I'd like to tell you before Mr. Ellis begins, that Mr. Barrels is unable to be here today, and I need to enter into the record the complete endorsement of the Oregon League of Financial Institutions on his behalf. And Mr. Ellis will now lead you through a portion of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Ellis, here today in a capacity representing the Oregon Bankers Association. I'd like to open with a quote from Representative LaFalce, that he is part of the congressional record, that he made in introducing his bill recently, H.R. 1450. During the 101st Congress, the Small Business Committee held hearings to explore the impact of current uncertainty regarding the exemption provisions on lending to small business. This uncertainty resulted from a series of court cases since 1985. The uncertainty has adversely affected the ability of otherwise good businesses to borrow funds. Testimony from government agencies, business community representatives, environmentalists, and bankers made clear that banks and other lending institutions are increasingly refusing loans to creditworthy small businesses that either use hazardous materials or are located in areas of possible contamination because of fears regarding potential liability generated by court action. In the continuing credit crunch in which we find ourselves, we cannot tolerate unnecessary impediments to appropriate lending. It is noteworthy that EPA itself acknowledged that legislation might well be necessary, even if a rule were eventually promulgated to provide certainty through statutory guidance. As previous EPA testimony indicates, the agency is itself acutely aware that the current uncertainty is impacting adversely on the ability of a range of businesses to obtain financing. This is one of the points that we want to make sure we make clear today and leave you with, that, and I don't want to steer you wrong here, certainly lenders want to avoid this kind of liability, but lenders are also concerned that they are not, they're in a situation now where they cannot lend to certain types of businesses and be sure that they are practicing safe and sound banking. And if that's the intent of the law as it exists, well, then so be it. But I don't think it is. What I'd like to do is, and I apologize for reading to you, but I don't think I can say it any better than I've said it in the beginning of this testimony, read a short summary of the testimony, which is followed by a section-by-section analysis. But I think at that point, instead of going all the way through the sections, maybe we'd open it up to questions or leave it up to you. The Act will protect lenders and fiduciaries from strict liability under Oregon law for hazardous substance contamination when a lender or fiduciary did not cause, contribute to, exacerbate, or fail to report the contamination. Recent judicial decisions have held lenders liable for contamination on foreclosed property and even for contamination on property in which the lender has a security interest but has not foreclosed. Lenders in Oregon have been forced to restrict the availability of credit to businesses which, because of the nature of their business or the condition of their property, may have environmental liability. These are businesses, in many cases, which may need credit to conduct environmental cleanups. In 1989, as Mr. Bronner has pointed out, the Oregon legislature recognized that such businesses may not be able to obtain credit from private lenders to finance cleanups. In fact, that is in the legislative findings in the 1989 Act, and authorized the Department of Environmental Quality to guarantee loans for that purpose. I submit that that has not worked. Under current laws, which have been interpreted to impose strict environmental liability on lenders, such businesses are having trouble obtaining credit for any purpose. Without access to credit, businesses with contamination problems are failing instead of cleaning up their problems and staying in business. As a result, the economy suffers and the cleanup costs may fall on the public fisc. Lenders also are forfeiting contaminated collateral rather than foreclosing and attempting a cleanup, with the probable result of the contaminated property being abandoned to the public. Other recent judicial decisions have indicated that trustees and other fiduciaries may be held personally liable for contamination on property held in trust. The EPA has asserted in at least one case that the liability of a trustee is personal and not limited to the assets of the trust. As a result, commercial trustees are becoming increasingly unwilling to manage real property, and trusts may be resorting to trustees that are less qualified to deal with the complexities of environmental problems. This Act will protect lenders before foreclosure from strict liability for contamination on property of a debtor. It will provide more limited protection with respect to contamination on property acquired through foreclosure. In both circumstances, the lender will not be protected if it caused the contamination through a violation of law or if it unlawfully interfered with the investigation or cleanup of the contamination. For property acquired through foreclosure, the Act will protect the lender only if it is actively trying to dispose of the property. A lender will lose its protection if it sells the property and fails to disclose to the buyer known contamination. With respect to property acquired through foreclosure, the lender also would lose the protection to the extent it exacerbates the contamination, fails to report, or fails to take reasonable precautions against foreseeable acts or omissions of third parties. There is a rather broadly defined group of lenders in the Act. Commercial lenders and governmental financial institutions and the secondary market are specifically protected. Other lenders are protected with respect to secured credit transactions, including conventional secured loans, sale, leaseback, land sale contracts. A lender is not protected from liability arising out of its own capacity other than as a lender, such as an owner of real property for its own business purpose, i.e., if a bank owns a branch or something like that. or to the extent its acts or emissions exacerbate contamination. Because contamination impairs the value of collateral or property acquired through foreclosure or held in trust, it's argued that lenders or fiduciaries can achieve a windfall by having the public clean it up and then selling it and thereby gain from the public's actions.
Mr. Chair?
Clark, could you go through that again, just that last portion?
By allowing the public to pay for cleaning up a piece of property upon which a lender has a security interest, and then allowing the secured lender to foreclose, that they could gain a windfall profit from the public's actions. And if the lender is exempted under this act, and DEQ, for instance, were to clean up a piece of property, we agree that it would be wrong for the lender to benefit from that cleanup activity.
I realize it's a contrary argument to your position, but the argument that you've just given us that the other side would make seems to me can only be sustained if the lender didn't know at the time that the institution made the loan that there was a problem with the property. I mean, I assume that property that's got a problem with hazardous waste is probably not quite worth as much as everybody thought it was. So you don't get the windfall unless you knew and the other person knew and you sort of sold it low, or you loaned on it low. It gets cleaned up, now its value goes up, and you're going to turn around and sell it. But you're not covered under the act there anyway.
I agree with that. Okay. What we're proposing, though, is it goes one step further, and that is to allow DEQ to have a lien against the property in the lender's hands for their cleanup costs. So that there's no question that if the public has to spend money and a lender owns the property and they're exempted under this act, and if there's enough value in the property, the state's going to get their money back. We don't agree that we should benefit from their actions. The act would provide greater protection to fiduciaries than lenders. This protection is in recognition that fiduciaries have no personal interest in property held in trust and therefore should not be exposed to unlimited personal liability if it's contaminated. A fiduciary will be protected by the act from strict liability for contamination unless it causes contamination through some unlawful act or omission, illegally hinders investigation or cleanup, or fails to disclose to a buyer the existence of the contamination. The act specifically preserves existing liability of the trust or estate for which property is held or managed by a fiduciary. Thus, although a fiduciary would be protected from personal liability, the assets of the trust or estate would be subject to liability. Again, fiduciaries are broadly defined because it's the act of being a trustee rather than just institutional trustees or something like that that this act seeks to protect. Finally, the act encourages lenders and fiduciaries to undertake investigations and cleanups by protecting them from liability arising out of such actions. This is important, and it's an issue in the act that is likely to raise controversy because, as drafted, it would exempt lenders from negligent conduct taken in cleaning up hazardous waste facilities. There's a reason for that, and I want to make this clear. Ordinarily, you don't hear people arguing that they should be exempted from liability for their own negligence. But cleaning up hazardous waste sites is a very technical area. What is negligence in that sort of activity is very hard to define. One expert could say, you should have done X, and another expert will say, no, you should have done Y. If this legislature thinks that it is good public policy to hold out a carrot to incent lenders to actually clean up these sites and not abandon them to the public, I submit that the exculpation from negligence is necessary. Otherwise, lenders will not conduct these actions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, if we could go to Mr. Sherman, and then we'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Mr. Sherman, Charlie Forrest.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sherman representing the Oregon Bankers Association. I'll be brief, but I do want to spend just a minute or two speaking to some of the concerns that we've heard expressed, not even so much specifically with regard to this bill, but just generally as people around the country have addressed this very important subject. We've had Superfund and some of the related statutes on the books for up to 10 years now. We've seen, as the others have pointed out, some court decisions that have been unpleasant surprises for those who have the unfortunate or the misfortune to get caught in the crossfire of hazardous waste liability. But there have been some suggestions that this bill or other measures like it would yield some inappropriate results, and I want to respond to some of those concerns. The first of those is a concern that the bill will impede cleanup. We believe that this bill will more fairly and reasonably balance the equities between the parties who are involved in a hazardous waste site and will actually encourage owners and lenders to clean up sites at private expense rather than leaving that responsibility in all cases to the public. Secondly, there's the concern expressed that the existing programs are working. It ain't broke, why fix it? We believe that is clearly not true, and I would cite again the Fleet Factors case and other cases where lenders and others have been held liable under circumstances that we don't think Congress or the state legislatures ever intended for them to have liability. And the intended protections in the state and federal laws are simply not working, particularly where lenders foreclose, but even as in Fleet Factors, in cases where the contaminated property was never foreclosed upon, nevertheless there is a very serious threat of liability to the lender or the fiduciary who happens to be in any way associated with the contaminated property. Another concern that we've heard expressed is that this bill will discourage careful loan policies, and I think that's one of the biggest bugaboos that I want to put to rest here. The suggestion is that if we let the lenders or the fiduciaries, let's focus on the lenders, let the lenders off the hook, that they'll cease being careful about what properties they loan to and what companies they loan to. But that misses, I think, a very important point. If my bank makes $1 million loan to a plating or a battery company or something like that, and they take a mortgage on that company's property, even if the bank under no circumstances can be held liable for the cleanup costs, the bank still stands to lose the value of the security. If that $1 million property is reduced to $100,000 or $200,000 of value as a result of the contamination, we've got a big problem, and we've got that without any liability for cleanup, and we would not suggest and do not suggest in this bill that that risk, that liability, be removed from our shoulders. It's still there. It will always be there, and it's appropriate that it be there. We should be required to exercise due diligence in lending activities, and nothing in this bill will take that away. So we're not going to discourage careful lending practices with this bill. Another point that is suggested is that the bill will create more orphan sites. Now, an orphan site is a site that people walk away from, that nobody wants to clean up. And I suggest to you that actually the opposite is the truth. If you look at this bill and carefully consider its provisions, I think you'll find that it will encourage private enterprise to get involved in the funding and otherwise participating in the cleanup of these sites. Today, lenders are walking away. They're walking away in the sense that they won't make loans when there's any question of contamination. They won't make loans for cleanup. They won't foreclose on properties which are contaminated because of the potential liability. So we've got orphan sites that we believe under this bill would not be orphan sites. Let me just close with the observation that what we've tried to do here is to construct a carefully balanced bill that recognizes that these hazardous waste problems are with us, and they're going to be significant problems for all concerned, including lenders, even with the passage of this. We've tried to be carefully balanced, and we think this is a much more carefully balanced approach than we've seen in some of the other states, such as Colorado, which I believe last year passed a law which basically eliminates liability for lenders regarding contaminated properties, except where there's a willful or reckless contamination of the site by the lender. We believe this is a balanced and careful approach and one which deserves your favorable consideration. We'll be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Representative Dell, do you have any questions? Jim Johnson.
Where's the federal law on this? The Superfund, the whole legislation from the federal, this whole thing started from the federal arena. What does it speak to at all on liability?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, federal law, when it was adopted in 1980, provides that lenders are exempt. It's been the case law that has developed across the country as the interpretation of that exemption that causes us the problem. We thought we were exempt. We thought we did not have a liability. We found otherwise.
So would this bill then relieve you of that civil liability under federal law? Somebody want to take you to federal court?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, let me see if I can respond to that. No, it would not. This, of course, has no impact on the federal law. And the reason that Mr. Ellis made reference to the LaFalce bill and the Garn bill that are going to be heard by Congress shortly is that we expect Congress to move on a parallel track with this bill at the federal level.
Okay.
And what we hope and expect to come out of this process is a more realistic balancing on both the federal and state level. If that doesn't happen, then frankly, this bill doesn't do us a great deal of good.
All right.
But we believe it will.
Thank you. I missed the first part of Mr. Garn's, Mr. Ellis's testimony. Thank you.
Further questions? Well, I have a question, and this has to do with my lack of acquaintance with the trust business, so perhaps Mr. Ellis can try it. I understand you're with the trust division, or legal division, I guess, now.
In the law department.
In the law department, okay. And that has to do, I mean, I'm not concerned about the good faith lenders. I mean, the consumers of America, I think we watch the SNL business and we go, wow, what's going on in the finance industry? And I see that the name or the list of what fiduciary includes agents, custodians, attorneys, in fact, subject to the provisions of Chapter 709, which is the regulated trust industry. And I see, for life of me, I don't think I've ever looked at this chapter until just a moment ago, and I pulled it out and I looked at it, and I see that there is a right of action against the deposit and against the trustees for breach of trust. Now, is there any conceivable opportunity as a condition of trust, the trustee might have the obligation to do cleanup of a company, and therefore somehow and that they would breach their trust if they didn't take that duty. And somehow this bill could be used as a defense to say, well, notwithstanding the terms of our trust, we're not responsible for cleanup. You're responsible, I understand it, if you're there's liability if an act of omission causes or exacerbates the release of materials. But once, so to speak, once the toxic horse is out of the barn, your duties are end at that point. You're not responsible to get the horse back. So I know that's a long way and probably a very naive way of asking a question about trust law, but can you make any sense out of my question?
Mr. Chair,
help me with that.
Representative Edmondson, let me give it a try.
Okay.
First of all, you have to distinguish between the liability of a trustee in their fiduciary capacity to the trust, to the beneficiaries of the trust. Now, that is guided by state law and by the whatever the trust instrument says, okay? So let's say we have a situation where there is contaminated real property that is held in trust. What this law is intending to do is, except to the extent that that was caused by an act or omission of that trustee, exempt the trustee's personal assets. Like, if you're an attorney and acting as a trustee, the attorney's personal assets would be exempt, but not the trust assets. Okay? The trust assets, those are free game, and would probably, in most circumstances, remain fully liable for hazardous waste cleanup. Certainly not impacted by this act.
Okay, stop. Then,
XYZ Bank of Oregon is the trustee for the ABC Corporation.
Correct.
Okay. And acquires all the assets of the ABC Corporation through foreclosure of a note or something of that nature. Now, ABC Corporation has property that's been contaminated. Are you saying that all the assets of this ABC Corporation are available to be for cleanup?
Mr.
But,
Chair.
But not the XYZ Bank? Its assets are not available?
Representative Edmondson, let me ask a question. Are you referring to the bank in this circumstance as a trustee under a deed of trust?
Well, possibly. Fiduciary seems broad enough that they could have several, could become a fiduciary in several capacities.
Well, first of all, under as a trustee under a deed of trust, you serve a very limited purpose, and that is part of the fiction that it's a three-party document. All you do is send out some notices, and generally you name a title company as a trustee, and if there's going to be foreclosure, you appoint a new trustee who is the lawyer that's going to do the foreclosure.
Okay.
So it would exempt them, yes,
okay.
The foreclosing trustee, because they didn't have anything to do with it.
Right. Okay.
Now, in your hypothetical, you said, trustee bank holds